Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another Lights On listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them
the
free.
Devil beware. Pastor Scheidbach is on the air.
Hello, I'm Dr. Scheidbach, pastor of the Lighthouse Baptist Church in Santa Maria, California. And your brain masseur, get ready for your brain massage. The SCOTUS ruling on mandates, a huge disappointment, yet everyone seems to be rejoicing. And other COVID-related news, the new Biden terrorism plan, oh my soul, got conservatives in the crosshairs, my friends. So behind the smokescreen of COVID overreaction, something much more ominous and nefarious is taking shape, and you should know about it. Breaking! Today, Stuart Rhodes, Oath Keepers leader, was arrested, shamefully, on charges of sedition conspiracy, adding to the long and growing list of political prisoners held by the Biden administration. What must be done? Okay, my dear friends, it's time for your brain massage.
True. Served here, flavored by delectable wit, delicious sarcasm, succulent sagacity, a gourmet meal for the mind.
The Supreme Court of the United States ruling on mandates was very disappointing, and it seems to me everyone is happy with the ruling. So I went to the SCOTUS website and downloaded and then read the case arguments. Frankly, I was appalled. But I should say at the outset, I do understand the court must address the case set before it. So some of the responsibility for what I'm going to point out as a terrible failure on the part of the court is the fault of the plaintiff in the presentation of their case. But anyway, very quickly, remember the present makeup of the court. On the liberal side, we've got Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan. And then on the conservative side, we have Thomas, Alito, Gorsuch, and Barrett. Then you have the deep state spoilers, Roberts and Kavanaugh. Now, I base that, by the way, on my observation that when a matter comes before the court that has serious implications contrary to the interests of the deep state, they consistently vote contrary to the interests of America. The case was set before the court by the National Federation of Independent Businesses, or NFIB, and they are the plaintiffs. They brought forward the case against OSHA as the defendant, opposing OSHA's vaccine mandates. The defendants supporting Biden's mandate essentially argued that OSHA has received from Congress a mandate or authorization to act in the interests of the health and safety of employees in the workplace, and that Biden's executive order directing OSHA to mandate vaccines for employees in businesses with over 100 employees, was consistent with that authority. The plaintiffs argued that OSHA was not given the power to require companies to mandate medical treatment for its employees, and that Biden's mandate extends the powers of OSHA beyond its original scope or authority. Now, the conservatives of the court prevailed and argued, essentially, that the question comes down to this: who has the power to respond to this pandemic? And their answer came down to this, quote, that power rests with the states and the Congress, not OSHA, end quote. In other words, the plaintiff approached their case by arguing OSHA was not given the power to compel businesses to require medical treatment for employees, even in a pandemic scenario. The state and the Congress, according to the court, is or are the entities that have the power to direct how the public how the government will respond to a pandemic. And I say, this totally misses the point. The point is not whether OSHA has the power to direct government response to a pandemic. I mean, it doesn't, but that's not the point. The question is whether government, whether legislative or executive or the judiciary, has the power to overturn the personal liberties of Americans. Now, follow along. I was appalled that neither the plaintiff nor not even one of the jurists thought to question the premise of this case, or even raise and address the essential question that underlies this case. Let's look at the premise. The court assumed, along with everybody else, that there is a pandemic that is extraordinarily dangerous to the lives of all Americans. So quickly, let's review the facts. 99.998% chance of recovery with actually no hospital or doctor intervention for persons 4 to 45. As I read recently, above a 99% chance, I think it is, somewhere in there, recovery for those 45 to 65, and above a 95% chance of recovery for those of us who are over 65. Recovery rates are vastly improved for those receiving early treatment. You know, the treatment that's opposed by Fauci and friends. Well, anyway, the point I'm making here is that the court proceeded to rule on a case that rests on a faulty premise and didn't even venture to challenge that premise. Second, the court totally missed the central question. The conservatives wrote in their opinion, in the affirmative of the case, quote, "The central question we face today is who decides? No one doubts that the COVID-19 pandemic has posed challenges for every American, or that our state, local, and national governments all have roles to play in combating this disease. The only question is whether an administrative agency in Washington, one charged with overseeing workplace safety, may mandate the vaccination or regular testing of 84 million people, or whether, as 27 states before us submit, that work belongs to state and local governments across the country and the people's elected representatives in Congress. This court is not a public health authority, but it is charged with resolving disputes about which authorities possess the power to make the laws that govern us under the Constitution and the laws of the land." Now, that sounds so reasonable and plausible, and I'm going to point out a very serious weakness in that argument. Okay. So, we understand the court did not want to posture itself or position itself as ruling on the question that really lay at the foundation of the case. Is there, in fact, a serious threat to the public that warrants any kind of intervention on the part of the government? And they offer as a reasonable explanation for that reluctance the fact that the court is not a public health authority. So, the court proceeded to rule within the following assumption. Quote, "There is no question that state and local authorities possess considerable power to regulate public health. They enjoy the, quote, general power of governing, end quote, including all sovereign powers envisioned by the Constitution and not specifically vested in the federal government," end quote, and that was referring back to something Roberts said. And they followed this with a caveat that, however, quote, "the federal government's powers are not general, but limited and divided," and here citing McCulloch versus Maryland, 1819. So stay with me, folks. And upon that basis, the court reasoned, quote, "not only must the federal government properly invoke a constitutionally enumerated source of authority to regulate in this area or any other, it must also act consistently with the Constitution's separation of powers," end quote. And because the defendant could not present any, quote, enumerated source of authority, end quote, from the Constitution or in the Constitution to support allowing OSHA to mandate vaccines for employees of businesses with over 100 employees, the court referred them to the power of the state and or the federal legislative body as those bodies that actually have authority to take care of this. And I say, what? The Congress can require businesses to mandate vaccines for their employees? You see, that's the snake hiding in the language of this court's ruling that you need to pay attention to and hear the rattle. Where in the Constitution do we find this power given to the legislators or to any government entity? You see, they have conceded the major premise. I talked about this last week without challenging it. They grant to state and local authorities, quote, considerable power, end quote, to regulate public health. But as they argue in this case, quote, "the federal government's powers are not general, but limited and divided." So there are some limitations here. How about we address some of those limitations? Is not the government's power restrained by the natural rights of man, by our human rights, for example, to decide what gets jabbed into our body, bodily autonomy? This question doesn't even get raised. Did not Nuremberg address the issue and conclude, to everyone's assent, by the way, that no person shall be coerced or compelled to participate in a medical experiment? How could the court have not at least mentioned this important limitation of government? Congress cannot make a law that violates our basic human rights. What's going on here? You don't have to forage out into the practice of medicine, dear conservatives on the court, to rule that the Nuremberg Code has application here. This is not an approved vaccine. It's been administered under emergency use authorization. There is no way anyone has the right to force you to stick something into your body over your objections. Nor can they coerce you to do so by threatening to take away your livelihood if you refuse. To participate in a medical experiment has to be done only with your consent, and that being after being fully informed. The premise must be challenged. Not only must Biden et al. Establish constitutional authority to impose this regulation on Americans, but Congress also and any state cannot compel or coerce any human being to take a shot against their objections. And furthermore, they don't even provide fully informed consent, as you know. Listen, the court missed this. And I'm telling you, these guys are not dull-witted. There was one moment during the oral arguments I listened to that I thought I noticed Clarence Thomas stick a toe across the line. It seems to me they were trying to avoid. I think they were purposely avoiding getting tangled up in the real question of this matter. I have to believe these guys know what is the real core question here. Can the government, under emergency powers, suspend the inalienable rights of citizens protected by God in our Constitution? That's the big question. And they don't want to open that Pandora's box for fear what will come out of it. In summary, the court turned the case into a separation of powers matter that is not entirely without merit, but it misses the real point of the case. Does the government have the power to compel citizens to participate in a medical experiment? Becky and I were talking about this, and she reflected that it sounds similar to what happened with the court on the Obamacare issue. They decided that the legislative branch had the power to suspend the Constitution that would ordinarily prohibit government from mandating what the American people purchase, what they do with their money, what they buy. And they decided Congress could mandate every American purchase health insurance. Well, now they're doing it with vaccines. And you see, so many of you are happy because the court stopped Biden's vaccine mandate. Well, yeah, that's a good thing. But friend, look deeper. When you read their decision, you discover all they really did is punt it to the Congress. This ruling essentially says Congress could come behind now and pass a law that requires all Americans to be vaccinated. More and more, the Constitution is being supplanted by the will and whim of men in power. And as you know, the court's decision left the medical professionals susceptible to Biden's vaccine mandate. Let's look at that and then we'll go to a break. The premise of this decision is that since the federal government funds Medicare and jointly with each state also funds Medicaid, that therefore the federal government has a legitimate interest in regulating the doctors that provide medical services to their Medicare and Medicaid patients. And on this ground, the court decided the federal government could mandate vaccines for all medical professionals who treat Medicare and Medicaid patients. Well, once again, the court is totally missing the point or hiding from it. Do you want to know what the answer is to this particular dilemma? Very simple. Give that decision to the patient. If a patient doesn't want someone unvaccinated treating them, okay, let them say so. Let them have a physician that is vaccinated, and vice versa. As my professor used to say, you see how simple it is? Thinking within the context of freedom and liberty is always the best place to cook up a good answer for these kinds of problems. There's nothing at all hard about the situation, but the idea that government purchases the right to intrude upon the inalienable rights of American citizens by funding their medical treatment, that should send a cold shiver down the spine of every American. There is no way the Constitution provides power to the government to intrude upon the rights, right down to the right of bodily autonomy. There is no way the conservatives on that court don't see this. I can't believe it. What is going on? The conservatives on the court, it seems to me, purposely evaded the central question. Is there any scenario in which it is okay for the government to suspend our natural and constitutionally guaranteed rights against our will? And that's a question we're going to have to grapple with, my friends, okay? It's time to take a short break. I'll be
right back. Christians should rule the world. A startling statement to most today, but it wasn't always that way. Our founders made many statements to the effect that America is a Christian nation and that we should prefer Christians to hold offices of power in this country. John Jay, founder and first Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, was concerned Christians were not being warned against the danger of electing non-believers to office in America. Every day, we see what happens when we give the power of government to unbelievers. George Washington, Sam and John Adams, Hamilton, virtually all our founders warned us against the vanity of supposing our liberties would be safe in the hands of heathen who rail against Jesus. We will not have that man to reign over us. Go to GodsWar2020.com. Pastor Scheidbach is on the air.
Hello and welcome back. I'm Dr. Scheidbach, pastor of the Lighthouse, your brain masseur and Paul Revere's lantern lighter. Lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, singling the enemies on the march, an enemy that is right now in the process of pickpocketing our liberties right out of our back pockets. Biden had hardly shuffled from the stage where he was inaugurated before he directed his national security team to review United States government efforts to address domestic terrorism. I mean, first thing he did, that report was released to him in June, and I've read through it, and it's very alarming. It's titled National Strategy for Countering Domestic Terrorism. The behavior of the Democrats since November 3rd suggests they're expecting some sort of massive American revolution to break out. They're looking over their shoulder, fearing insurrections coming upon them. You know, fearing what they did will be done to them. Like the proverb, the wicked flee when no man pursueth, but the righteous are bold as a lion. It's like they have been waiting and even, well, in some ways, hoping Americans would rise up against Biden the way they did against King George. They egged us on into the streets to confront the real terrorists, BLM and Antifa, back in the Summer of Love, but we did not buy in. They staged a riot on January 6th, but with the exception of something like, I think it was two or three out of the million protesters there that day, the patriots there did not supply the large-scale insurrection, I'm doing air quotes here, that they planned. So they're making do with what they got. The Democrats, together with their Judas Republicans, perpetrated a coup on November 3rd, and they've been looking over their shoulder ever since. So what is the first thing Biden does as acting, and that's underscored and in bold, president? He tasks the national security team to lead a 100-day comprehensive review of U.S. efforts to address domestic terrorism. Why would you do that unless you had reason to believe you had just done something that was going to totally tweak the American patriots? As I read through the document, I notice some of the old propaganda tricks of Goebbels. You know, connect what would seem to be a benign and irrelevant concern to one that is recognized by everyone as a serious problem. In this way, people begin seeing them as related and as equal in concern. So you connect the hate crimes motivated by racial bias, which almost never happens in America today. Well, unless you're Jesse Smollett and you stage it, or unless you're this a linebacker-sized black thug that jumped on a 75-year-old Korean-American and knocked her to the ground unconscious. Yeah. But anyway, connect that concern to patriots agitated about government overreach? Think about this. So, as I'm reading this document, I'm thinking it is written in a way to point almost exclusively to white supremacists as the number one major threat of domestic terrorism. But also, it uses language that would suggest to any reasonable mind that every American that is disgruntled with the present government is a white supremacist, a potential terrorist. It's a strategy to eliminate dissidents. Here are some takeaways, and some of this illustrates my point. First, do you notice a sense of urgency on the left regarding an expectation of some uprising from the white militia? You know, it's like white supremacists are looking behind every tree and around every corner, just looking for the opportunity, you know, to take their rifles and go to a baseball diamond where Democrats are playing some baseball and start shooting them. Oh, wait, no. That was James Hutchinson, the guy who asked whether those playing on the baseball diamond where he went with his guns were Republican or Democrat, and when he learned they were Republican, he opened fire, almost killing Scalise and seriously injuring two U.S. Capitol officers. It happened in 2017, not long after Trump took office, and it took the FBI almost 3 years to admit this was an act of domestic terrorism. But they're ready to call you a domestic terrorist right now. The fact is, as odious and offensive as white supremacy is, we really have not seen a lot of that sort of thing. I mean, not since the days of Byrd, right? Senator Byrd, who took off his hood to join the Democrats pretending to be defenders of the blacks. And blacks have not been required to sit at separate tables or drink from separate water fountains since the Democrats lost their Jim Crow laws and the Civil Rights Act was passed. I mean, over against the objections of Democrats. I mean, ever since Biden tried to stop the integration of our public schools and failed, you know, he didn't want his kids to go to a jungle, right? Ever since all that got cleared up, the Democrat white supremacists have pretty much gone underground. And now they carry out their agenda of oppression upon the black community from underground, from behind the facade of advocating racial equality. The fact is, the white supremacists in this country have always been the Democrats, and they're forced to hide their racial hatred and sense of superiority over all others. So who are these people really trying to place in the crosshairs of their terrorism plan? I've referenced the document in my notes, the link to the official White House document called National Strategy for Countering Domestic Terrorism. Let me give you some of the highlights. It broadly defines domestic violent extremists, DVEs, as, quote, persons motivated by a range of ideologies and galvanized by, listen, recent political and societal events. Did you catch that? Recent political and societal events. They have specifically in view the concerns about the November 3rd election. That's their focus. You'll see it come up repeatedly in the document. The National Security Council assessment of the present danger of domestic terrorists seems to be fixated on anticipation of reaction to the stolen election. They say these recent events, quote, pose an elevated threat to the homeland in 2021. They expected something to happen in 2021. Some sort of armed retaliation from the American people, patriots, against them for stealing the election in 2020. Here are some of the things the National Security Council identified as issues to watch. Bias against minority populations, something we all agree is a concern. And then, second to that, perceived government overreach. What? Which they said would, quote, almost certainly continue to drive domestic violent extremist radicalization and mobilization to violence, really. Along with that, they warned that newer, quote, socio-political developments, such as narratives of fraud in the recent general election, right? These are the things that they think identify domestic terrorists. You got to be kidding me. Tell me you remember how the Democrats and Judas Republicans reacted to Hillary's loss. They cried foul and protested the election was rigged. They did all of that in 2016 and continued this all the way through Trump's first term. And now they say questioning the legitimacy of an election marks someone as a potential domestic terrorist. Are they telling us something about themselves? What else? Oh, and quote, the emboldening impact of the violent breach of the U.S. Capitol, end quote. So if you question the legitimacy of Biden's election, and or if you participated in the J6 protests or deny their hyped up claims about that protest and point to Pelosi, Schumer, and others who obviously conspired to agitate a riot, they could use as a pretext to do what they're doing, holding 700 plus political prisoners without bail, without any right to a speedy trial, without benefit of trial before a court of law, without the right of counsel. They're being treated like terrorists. Get it? Surprised they haven't been shipped off to Gitmo. What's the third thing that marks you as a potential domestic terrorist? Kicking back against the government's handling of COVID-19 pandemic. So if you are resistant to succumbing to the way over the top pressure to take a vaccine that is effectively ineffective and unnecessary, and you resist the CCP mask mandate and effort to isolate Americans from one another, carried out by their American puppets, Fauci and friends. And if you question the election and call out the fraud and point out the Dominion machine manipulation of our elections, turning them into selections by the deep state rather than elections by the people, if you are a critical thinker and can see what is obvious and are willing to look at the evidence and see what is in front of you, Biden's administration has marked you as a potential terrorist. Okay, I'm coming up on my time, and I want you to see the context in which this national strategy for countering domestic terrorism is being implemented. Have you noticed how many times in the course of a week, American patriots concerned about the direction of this country and about election integrity and so on, have you noticed how many times during the course of a week, single week, that we are referred to as white supremacists and called terrorists? The president himself, in a recent speech, effectively called everyone a white supremacist racist that objected to his party's bill crafted to permanently take away our right to vote, and doing that by making the illegal activities that took place in 2020 the law of the land, a permanent fixture of our elections. He said, if we disagree with this wicked plan, we're on the side of George Wallace? What? George Wallace's endorsement was relished by Biden not too long ago. He said, we're on the side of Jefferson Davis against Abraham Lincoln if we oppose this bill. Friend, the Jefferson Democrats fought to continue slavery. The national strategy for dealing with domestic terrorism is being written and implemented at a time when parents who object to CRT and masks in the schools are being called white supremacists and being called terrorists. And I mean officially designated potential terrorists by the Biden Department of Justice, this strategy. And we did not even get into the provisions, by the way. Essentially, they want to take all the provisions of the Patriot Act and turn them against American citizens. Yeah, they are wanting to apply domestically. And by the way, they're already doing it. 700 plus political prisoners held in D.C. right now. The arrest of Stuart Rhodes, leader of Oath Keepers, on bogus charges of sedition conspiracy. They've been sitting on this since January 6, 2021, and they've obtained no new evidence, but they run out to make the arrest after they were challenged. Hey, if there was an insurrection, why have there been no arrests? So they produce one for you. It's all politicized. In this environment, when almost daily someone in the mainstream media is calling white conservatives white supremacists and terrorists, painting with very broad brushes. One Democrat political pundit recently declared the Republican Party is a terrorist organization. Yeah, some Jason something or other. I can't take time to run out his name right now. But I heard him say it right out loud in front of God and everybody, and then insist upon it and bear down on it. The Republican Party is not a political party, he said. It's a terrorist organization. Where is all of this headed? Well, it's obvious. The deep state is a cornered black mamba, one of the most deadly snakes in the world. Someone's certainly kind of trying to make something racial out of the choice of black mamba. Good night. You know what? Scratch that. The deep state hydra-headed red serpent is who is cornered right now. And that serpent's raging, seething hatred of America is obvious, lashing out. Friend, this kind will not go out peacefully. It won't go whimpering off. It'll cast to the ground first and hiss and strike. The One Worlders have never gotten so close to completing their tower. They're not going to yield and give up willingly. They're going to try to bring the entire country down with them into their own destruction and chaos. But tune in to my comforting counsel tomorrow night at around 8 p.m. on our church Facebook page and learn what we're doing to prepare for the coming war. I've lit the lamps of the church belfry arch. You let me know you see they're on. Call 1-805-314-2114. Leave a message for me in our listener response hotline or go to brainmassage.net and send me an email. God bless you. God bless America. And I'll see you in church.